Welcome to CoCurious, which is a community of learning professionals who are reimagining learning and financial sustainability. My name is David McLean, and I founded Learning Advisory to help academic and corporate education providers better balance learning excellence and their sustained financial performance. Our mission is simple: ensure that every cent spent on learning maximizes both the educational experience and an organization's bottom line. CoCurious provides an insight into this challenge and how we at Learning Advisory provide the support to address it. I was introduced to Linda's work originally in 2017, and I found it refreshing and have followed her work ever since. And her organization is called 50 Plus Skills. That's 50plus-skills.co.za. And last week, I had a meeting with Linda to garner her insights and her nuggets in preparation for a speaking engagement that I have at a learning and development conference that's coming up. And the topic is about Gen Z in the workplace and what we need to be aware of. We being older generations and ultimately agnostic of generation, because it's not for one generation to decide for all of the others. Linda, one of the things that I wrote down was, we will all become elderly. We will not all become elders. Tell us about that.
Thank you, David. Yes, that's a statement that I absolutely love, and you need to unpack it a little bit, because otherwise people kind of go, what does that mean? And it comes from a book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder by Chip Conley, who is an American. He is currently, I think he has just turned 60, but he found himself at the age of 50 at a crossroads, because he had sold a 26 boutique hotels that he had run since he had been 26, and was kind of at this crossroads of what he was going to do next. And he got a call from the venture capitalists of Airbnb. This is back in 2008. And they wanted him to be the kind of mentor to the CEO, and to kind of hold him on hospitality and industry knowledge, as well as leadership and EQ. And he found himself at that stage going and sitting with them in their strategy meetings, all three of them, or the team around the table, being half his age almost. And he said he listened to this digital conversation and he realized they were talking a different language. And he said eventually over that period, he decided that he would trade DQ, digital quotient, with them for EQ. And he termed, through this book he's written as a result of his journey, a term called a men turn, which, if we are both open, young and old, to learn, we can mentor and intern with each other. And so through that, he started the Modern Elder Academy, because the second half of the book is about when we leave the professional workplace where many of us have been for most of our lives, we need to evolve into the identity we will be in the next season, rather than still being the ex-CEO who had a corner office or whatever your title may have been, because when we finish work, on a Friday we are someone, and on a Monday we are no one, unless we work through this process of evolving. And so the second half of the book is about how do you become a modern elder? And yet I see so many people who will become elderly without going through that process.
The men turn is magical. I've thought so much about that since you shared it with me. And it's broadened my situational awareness. It's given me greater receptiveness and humility and enthusiasm as I continue my practice of really challenging the ease of ageism and generationalism. An example was the original title, working title that I had for this talk was Young Horses Run Fast and Old Horses Know the Way. And I put it to you and I could see you were like, nah. And I said, I can see that's not resonating with you. And you said, no, because not all young horses run fast and not all old horses know the way. And I was like, it's so true. And so what I have retitled it, you said this, is Why Can't Everybody Be Normal Like Me? And of course, the title is deliberately tongue-in-cheek and very serious. So in your work, you know, you're a coach, you work with a lot of executives, and you work with a lot of very, very talented, experienced people who are concerned about maintaining their relevance and belonging in the world as they get older and worked closer towards retirement. So what shifts in learning and development, organizational learning and mindset have you seen, assuming you have? What are those shifts?
So I'm a lifelong learner myself, but also an experiential learner. I've almost fallen into life cycle learning. When I was younger, I was in the early childhood sector, so I got to learn a lot about the early development. And then from my 50th birthday at my own crossroads, found myself back in the classroom and going to Gibbs in the inaugural social entrepreneurship course in 2009. But for me, one of the biggest changes that I think I talk about a lot is that longevity and technology have brought about, at those two mega trends have created a completely new landscape. The longevity, because we're going to be living longer and many of us will be healthier for longer. So at Davos in 2020, they said that we will live on average 10 years longer than our parents and 20 years longer than our grandparents. And so this pensionable age of 60 or 62 or 65 or whatever it might be in the company that you work for feels like it needs to change, but it hasn't. It's the red tape in the system, and South Africa is quite different from European and American companies where they've done away with that. But the relative rate of change of those two trends have changed how we work, how we learn, what money we may need for a longer life. And so unlearning, relearning, and upskilling are critical if we want to continue to earn beyond that crossroads point of the pension rule. The challenge is that you have to evolve into that modern elder to open your own mind to who am I and what are the gifts. I use the Ikigai principle of saying to people at this point in their lives, what do I love? What am I good at? What skills? What could I do to earn money and what does the world need? Because in this season beyond 60, you may want to evolve into a portfolio life of a few different things. So some is volunteering, some is consulting, some is family time and what we may have called as old time retirement, but it's a mixture. But the journey and the baton is now in your hands. It's moved from what the corporate learning is to the learning you need to do. And I run a 6-month course called The Next Chapter, both with individuals who come to my public 6-month course and within companies. And I find many of them that have been, for instance, in the financial services in one company for 30 or 35 years, find it very hard to even contemplate working beyond that point. And even though they may hate what they do, they'd rather go back and consult if they're lucky enough to get a contract, which are few and far between now, and not deal with the change that's needed. And so, again, technology has opened ways for us to learn, whether it is a course through MIT, and you don't want the certificate necessarily, you just have the opportunity to learn, whether it's listening to a podcast. I learn a lot from just listening to podcasts, reading books. So I think for me personally, the challenge is being open-minded, a growth mindset to learn, unlearn, reskill. And it opens up an amazing world for you. I remember in the classroom in 2009, I felt like someone had pushed a button in me because it just was this amazing opportunity to learn again. I currently find myself doing a 12-week course through UCT Bertha Institute, and I'm absolutely loving it. It's all, you know, learning on your own. And so that's where the technology has changed the world of learning a lot.
You remind us again, also within all of this, to be brave enough to be surprised, and surprised that my assumptions and that my worldview doesn't denote a single truth, but a way of being and a way of participating. If we go back to the traditional, let's call it what it is, the legacy of contractual retirement age, you mentioned in that 60 to 65 bracket, quite a lot of the rationale from certain quarters for that is for the elders to move out to make way for recent graduate school leavers, young people, to enter the workforce, clearly compounded by, in our countries of South Africa, high rates of unemployment. If you were a senior member of Parliament and you were the head of the Department of Labour, what would be your strategy in retaining the eldership in society and organizations and provisioning for the entry of young, new people into the workforce?
That's a wonderful question. So when I studied at Gibbs 15 years ago now, that was what I came out of that program, is I wanted to create a skills bank or a place where these modern elders could create a tribe, or where collectively they could move from the workplace into this modern eldership through a process, because I think that the process is important for the individual. And then to be able to create within this skills bank an opportunity, firstly, for mentorship, for people to be coached, very mindful of the fact that I was doing it on South Africa, where our youth coming through, it's absolutely critical for them to have come into the workplace. And I did some work with civil engineering, where they brought back retired engineers to work with young civil engineers, because at the time, and it was around the World Cup in 2010, that middle group, well, the young engineers were struggling because the middle group was so pressurized with the work that they had no time to mentor the younger engineers. So they matched an older engineer who was retired with these young engineers, because in many things, mentorship, and especially in engineering, is around showing and doing and showing and doing. So for companies who do create the opportunity for their employees to become elders, they can also bring them back from an alumni point of view as mentors, as industry specialists, in focus groups in the marketing department, because there's a huge amount of money and time for many elders, both here and elsewhere in the world. But the marketing department is all young people, and they do not understand what the needs may be and how to market to that specific demographic group. And so It would be having a base where we can find 30 engineers to be able to work on a project with a mine, which we have been requested to do, or to put people into municipalities as mentors alongside the finance or the engineering departments. Young and old together, creating economic stability and growth for South Africa. That's our kind of byline, is age diversity benefits economic growth. And it is about, for some of those elders, reading in the classroom to children and volunteering in different places. So it's not the same for everyone. But one of the things that we do in our course is that every person is unique. And in this gift season, that's what we call it, between 50 and 75, you get to choose how you use your talents and gifts and your hands and your heart and your head to be able to make a difference. And so that would be some of the things I would do if I was in that position. And I really do encourage many more companies to gift their older employees with not just the finance tick piece, because they do that. And I've come alongside those sessions where the finance pension company or does the little talk within 6 months of retirement. And then I always ask to go second. And then I do the life planning piece. And I see people go from fear to hope. I have discovered over the years that 1 or 2 hours is not enough. They need much more than that.
What's often more challenging is the unlearning and relearning, because unlearning is twice the work, right? Because it's unlearning, which is challenging in and of itself. It's moving from what I know, or at least think I know for sure, to something else. So it's two components to progress. So based on what you've just shared as the leader of the Department of Labor, if you could provide a word of advice, one thing to companies to keep top of mind and in their practice to better navigate ageism around generations, up and down the age categories, what would that one thing be?
Recruit My Mom did some research last year, and she said, from ageism exists across the organization, and ageism is the one ism we will all experience. And she said, even in that report, some of the younger people felt they were too young for the job. And then many obviously feel that those of us that are in our 50s heading to the finish line are too old. And it is about the fact that very few of us get the opportunity to have good, strong conversations across the generations. And those kinds of things are so necessary, because when we can go deep with a group of people that are from different generations, we understand much better that I'm not normal like you, but I can learn from you. So I really advocate for companies to run some kind of internal, multi-generational conversation groups, just as part of the diversity and getting to know their fellow human beings better, and to improve their own internal process of understanding those younger and older than ourselves. I had a fabulous conversation yesterday with someone that has written a book that's on 5 generations in the workplace. Now, that is possible more often in Europe, and where there is no longer a defined age. But more and more, the richness of multi-generational workplaces is a fantastic strength to have, but you have to do the internal processes to make sure that that happens.
Our mission at Learning Advisory is to help academic and corporate learning providers balance learning excellence and sustain financial performance. So if this conversation resonated with you, check out the other episodes on CoCurious. Visit us online at learningadvisory.com, and let's keep learning, let's keep sharing, and let's keep holding each other to account for the advancement of ourselves and practicing what we teach.